She is hard. Her voice screams callous and her touch raw. You think she doesn't care, but she does, and she always has. You mistook her tenacity for bitch. She is quick. She can time travel like you've never seen before. You saw her tomorrow and didn't realize because you were stuck in yesterday. You mistook her forward thinking for Detro. She is quiet. Her silence scares you because it makes you unsure of yourself. She compels you to swallow and taste your vices. You mistook her composure for judgment. She is vital. Her urgency in this room is undeniable. Your rejection of it only ensures that her visit maintains. You mistook her necessity for oppression. She is unseen. If you had to guess, she would be everywhere and nowhere. Her body is not contained to the visible realm. You mistook her presence for absence. She is radical. Her mind is bottomless, but not like oceans. Bottomless like Black history and Panther bullets. You mistook her revolutionary for hostility. She is secure. Her ego suffocates your inner zealous. You wonder who could be that home. You mistook her confidence for hubris. She is sweet. She is diligent. She is imperfect. She is voice. She is ready. She is now and then. If you asked her why she is always misunderstood, why she is a giver even when we are takers, she would tell you it is because she is a leader.
Welcome. We have Wasita Francois. We got to get into that name. That name is just beautiful. And it's a reflection of when I say that name, Wasita Francois, I just feel special. I just feel like, oh, the halo is over me. And the glow, I got to tell you the glow. I followed you on Instagram and I was like, this woman, her body, you know, how she presents herself. It's just, she loves being Black, you know, and I have to say, and this is no shade to anyone else. I just love to see dark skinned women embrace their beauty because you are gorgeous. Your skin, your teeth, you know what I mean? Let's get into what this amazing woman is doing out here. She's a doula. Prior to being a doula, she was a trainer. And we see the physique that she has. It's clearly that she takes care of her body and she's eating well. And not only that, she's helping birthing amazing babies into the new world. Welcome to our Mers Reflections, Wasita.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited this morning and so much for that compliment on my complexion, because as a child, I didn't feel that way.
Wow.
Yeah, my mother is your complexion, but she loves, as she says, chocolate people. She's like, you are beautiful. She, you know, she's just in love with that. She's like, I love that you're so chocolate. Yeah. So it really like breathed into me having this mother that opened my hair and my complexion. I just don't know how to not love it, you know?
It's amazing that we as chocolate women, as dark skinned women, I think we love our skin because of our parents and our mothers. My mom is light skin, right? And so people would always say, how come you have a light skin mom, a light skin sister, a light skin brother, and the other? Because my parents have six of us. So three are light skin and three are dark skin. But they didn't understand why my mother looked the way she did and why I looked the way she did. And my mom always used to say, Andrea, you have such beautiful skin. Your skin is so, and I, Wasita, was Black when I was born.
Really?
I have lightened as I got older, and I'm so saddened because I was so, the nurses would say to my mom, she's just so beautiful. She's like dark chocolate milk. And I'm so glad I had a mom to embrace us the way your mother have embraced you and your color, because you knew we grew up in a time, and I'm much older than you. We grew up in a time where that was not the end thing to be dark. We didn't get much love being dark skinned.
I'm 40 and I remember kids saying like tar baby.
I can't believe you're 40. You don't even get it.
We're not that far. We both just
I just assumed you was like, I don't know, 29, 28.
I think you
40. Oh my God, we are in the same age group.
Yes, I'm like, no, we're really close. We both just look good. But I remember that. My great grandmother, though, she almost looks white.
Wow.
And she was another one. They would tease her and say, you picked the darkest man to be your husband, because all her children are basically dark because he was really dark.
Wow.
And she did have this big attraction to her sons in particular because of their complexion. You know, she was like, it reminded her of her husband.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So tell me a little bit, Wasito, where did you start and how did you transition from being a trainer to a doula, and what made you go into that realm of work?
So I'm from Philly originally. I moved here to be a stylist.
What?
Yeah, I moved here to be a stylist. And this was a time where they didn't have the programs. I have a degree in design, which is pretty much useless because being a stylist and being a designer are not the same.
Interesting. Tell me why.
You know, you're designing a collection, right? You're like, okay, this is inspiration for the season.
Right.
With a person or a client, you're telling a story for the moment.
Understood.
You're going to a party tonight, or this is a music video. This is the moment.
Understood.
You know, so it was so different. I was, this is crazy. I was running all around with bags and photo shoots, and I was a 26-year-old intern, which was horrible. Like, why are they talking to me like that? This is really, I'm a grown woman. So that had its journey. My hobby was always the gym. I was always a gym rat since about 20. Diabetes runs heavy in my family. Everyone told me because I was curvy with a small waist and hips, I would be overweight by 25. Like, listen, girl, it's going to be gone by 25. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, I'm competitive to begin with, though. Naturally, that's impossible. Right. So when I started going to the gym and doing that and loving it, but still wanting to do my fashion thing when I was here, but just realizing how happy the instructors were. They were happy. So my first certification was cycling. I went to give my resume for that. And the guy said to me, how about trainer? And I said, I'm not certified as a trainer. We can get you certified. And I thought, I kept telling him no. He said, hey, how about you just show up tomorrow morning for an interview? It'd be like 20 minutes. I walked in a room of 20 different managers.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my God, right? Like, usually I'm really good at an interview, but it's 20 people asking me different questions. They were excited because girl trainers are not a lot of female trainers. So every club was pretty much like, I want her, I want her.
Right.
And so I had to go through the process of getting my certification, learning that world, and kind of being on and off because I felt like the gyms were very possessive over you, where you only work for the gym. So I decided to teach classes everywhere because that was just open. And then that way I could also pick up private clients. Yeah, so I did bodybuilding. I did bodybuilding. And I was like, I'm not going to like it. I didn't like it, but I kept winning.
Right.
And so I was like, this is great, great. And then I got married.
Oh.
And we thought about, like, you know, I was like, I'm going to have a baby. I guess I'm going to have a baby. I'm married, right? I really didn't want one, but I love my husband, to be honest. I felt like he should be a dad. He was a pretty awesome, especially to be a Black man and a girl. We often, we try to paint a picture of, they don't take care of their children. They're incarcerated. Here I am with this Cornell grad. I'm like, yeah, I'm like, let's have a child, right?
Yes.
But that meant you can't bodybuild. You can't take supplements. Working out. And also, so I just kind of put that on hold, focused on creating a family. I launched a product and scrub cream and things like that. Kind of transitioned a little bit because I felt, if I'm going to have a baby, I'm probably going to want to be with the baby at least for a year and a half. To spend time, right?
Right.
Marriage got rocky, had two surgeries for fibroids, struggling getting pregnant.
Wow.
Was depressed about that because as Black women, I feel like our mothers and grandmothers didn't have that journey, right? They had children earlier.
Yes.
So they didn't mean to say it, but they were saying things like, I don't know why you just can't get pregnant. Everyone else is pregnant.
So it's hard to hear that. It's hard. How did you handle hearing that from your loved ones? Because it's one thing when we hear it from outsiders, we tend to try not to take it in as much. But when we hear that from people that we love and we know that they love us, how did you handle that?
I was pretty much shut down. You know, I really felt, you know, it was almost that theory of you got to keep this man and give him a baby. Now you can't, this mentality of like, give your man a baby. If you don't do it, someone else is going to. So that was going off in my head. But also, that's probably why I love fertility so much as well, because I know what that's like.
Yes.
And also the space I was in emotionally wasn't proper for a baby. You don't want to have a baby if the relationship is not going well.
Say that again one more time, Wasita, please.
You don't want to have a baby if the relationship is not going well.
Listen. For me, that's a powerful thing to say to have that much control that you know what your baby would need as a mother. A baby would need their dad and their mom, or their two moms or their two dad. They need partnership, because I'm telling you, it's not easy raising children alone. I watched my mom raise six kids by herself.
By herself?
Six kids. My daddy was, God rest his soul, but no, he was not a dad the way
That's
he should be.
My dad too. Where's your mother from originally?
My mom's from Jamaica. My dad is from Jamaica / India. My grandparents are Indian. They're from Calcutta, India. And my parents had four children. I'm the first American in my family. My twin and I have a twin brother.
Oh, goodness.
I have a twin brother. And so everyone else comes from Jamaica, India, England. So I'm the first American in my family. And I got to tell you, it's something, the pressure of having babies for women. It's sad to me that women have to be pressured. You got to get married. You got to make the baby. I don't know why they feel that a baby and a husband completes you.
Yes.
Let's talk about that.
Listen, my mother and I fell apart. We were close, super close, mm-hmm. when the divorce came, but she really looked at the marriage as my rite of passage. Mm. When it came to my career, I was like, you're a personal trainer. You're amazing. Rasita, I see you online. My mother was like, she rides a bike up and down for work. I don't know. I was like, how could you say that? Like a bike.
No.
But the husband, she knew his whole resume. Mm. And so we've had this like breaking, because it's, I know you don't get it, that men and money, they're connected. It's the only way you will survive, right? And the idea of staying in a relationship, even though it's abusive emotionally and physically, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but you can then say, oh, I was able to hang it out. I connect this to slavery, though. I feel as though slave masters introduced us to Christianity.
Yes.
And so they beat us. And so it was like, okay, if your husband beats you emotionally or physically and it's not working for you, if you can stay in this, mm-hmm. you will then die and meet white Jesus. That's the whole thinking. When I speak to her this way, she thinks I'm just having like a nervous breakdown.
No, it's real.
It's real. It is real. You know,
it's religion to break up Black families, and it has broken us up.
Yes. And I'm Baptist. I'm Baptist, but I'm also more spiritual. My church is very new school. Mm-hmm. We really preach in a sense of your life is up to you. Yes. I think in the past it was whatever happens, that was just God's way.
Yes.
And now you must endure, you know? So that I think was harder for me, ending the marriage, leaving the marriage, and finding out that I was pregnant. After trying, here I am, homeless, renting a room. I'm like, I left everything and was like, okay, let's go rent a room. I stayed on a girl's couch for like 2 weeks. At some point she was looking like, so when are you getting a new apartment? You know, I was like, we didn't really know each other that well.
Wow.
But I was like, you know, let me rent a room. And I just thought one day, I can't be pregnant. It's been 2 years of trying. But I was teaching and I remember feeling different.
Mm-hmm.
You know how your boobs are heavy? And I'm like,
yes. And tender. Yes.
Tender. And my appetite was like no other. It was just like, I need everything right now. I took the test and thought, I saw my friend, I said, I'll call you right back. Let me take this test real quick.
Right.
When the test came back positive, I was blown away. I was like, this is, and I wanted so much separation from the marriage. Mm-hmm. I didn't want anything to do. Now, looking back, I do think about it though, because in reality, children make you better a lot of times. You push sometimes. Even better. Sometimes, you know.
But my kids make me see the ugly side, and I'm going to be very transparent and very honest. I think, Wasita, this whole picture and cliche that people paint, oh, my kids are so great, my husband's so great, my family. Sometimes I fucking want to lose and rip their faces off. And I'm being quite frank and very honest. There is that side to motherhood that is ugly, that you just wish sometimes, why am I in this situation? Because I never wanted kids.
Oh, you didn't. Never wanted
kids. No. And my kids know this. It's not a secret. I never wanted children.
Mm.
So when you say, let's go back to this thought, when you say, here you are, you're homeless, you left your marriage, you are now pregnant after trying for 2 years, what do you do when you're like, wait, how do you talk yourself off the ledge? I don't know if you were on the ledge or not. How do you get control again?
I was so freaked out. So there was, I was in an apartment with three other people. I've never had a roommate. Right? So I was like, this is, one young lady was a little messy. Mm-hmm. There was a really cute black girl who I only saw the back of her head every morning. She had like a little cute blonde wig. So I knocked on her door. I said, hey, I know we don't know each other because we had never really said hi.
Right.
And I said, can you look at this test for me? And, you know, I think I'm seeing it wrong. You know, she said, no, you're pregnant. And I started going into like, girl, I just left my husband. This is crazy. She's looking at me like, I don't really care, sis. I don't even know you. Why are you telling me this? Yeah. I can watch my TV show. So I'm like, at some point I stopped myself. I said, okay, I'll talk to you later. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I go, I'm talking to my mom. My mom is freaking out because she's thinking band-aid for the marriage, right? Wow. Now you have a baby at the least, right? She's thinking you'll get child support. This is going to be the new way for your life. The child support will take care of you. So we're having this back and forth conversation because I'm saying to her, we barely made it. When do we stop having children that barely make it, right? Like, it's not just have them and like, let it go. I'm a married man's child. And my dad was a big time drug dealer in Philly. Mm-hmm. And it didn't really produce good children. I'm looking at my siblings now and their children. We were affected by that, not having him. Mm-hmm. So finally, the young lady comes back. She says, oh, you know, the same thing happened to me. She got pregnant by a 20-year-old after she left her husband. And she said to me, you know, you can go to Planned Parenthood. I was so freaked out that I had totally forgot about these other options. I just knew. I was almost like, you know what? If I can't get an abortion, I'm just going to roll down some steps. I'm just going to do this thing. Wow. I will go into the gym and I will lift every weight in this gym because I will not have this child.
Wow.
My mom came to her senses and said, you know, whatever you want to do, I'll support you. Wow. By the time I went to the doctor's office, I was like, can you do it today? They're like, no, no, that's not how it works. Wow. We have to do an appointment and you can come back. They felt so bad for me that they were crying. Because they were like, this girl's pregnant and homeless and was in this powerful relationship. They didn't even put it in the system.
Right.
And I came back a few days later and I was just like, God, why are you doing so much? My friends were like, what is going on? I'm like, I don't know why all this is happening at one time, but it birthed a better me, a better version of me. Mm-hmm. Because after you do all of that by yourself.
Girl, I know. Trust me. I know.
You know, but I'm glad you're honest with your children. Were they upset to hear that?
No, because I got to be honest with you. Listen, I've been through some things in my life, some things I'm definitely not proud of. I definitely don't hide it. As you know, I'm very open on my podcast about my life. But I thought it was important for my kids to know this is not was a dream for me to be married and have children. As a matter of fact, I wasn't even married when I had my daughter.
Mm.
I married after the fact. But it's neither here nor there. It's not something that I suggest. I had a baby at 19 years old. I didn't even know who the hell I was, but I made a decision to bring life into the world, knowing deep down back here, I never wanted kids because I saw my mom struggle with six. I didn't want that to be my life. And I grew up in a time where I don't give a damn if a man is a doctor, a lawyer, sanitation, whatever, a boxer. It doesn't matter because I don't feel what you do for a living describes who you are as an individual. That's just what you do to get paid. But I will tell you, Wasita, is this. I didn't know who I was. And here I am bringing life into the world. And now I got to make a decision, not only for her, but for me. Mm-hmm. Right? And so when I look at young girls, I don't shame them because I was them. What I say is you might want to think about that. And if you want to be intimate with a man and he doesn't want to be responsible, then you have to be responsible.
Yes.
Right? Because having a child changes your life forever. They didn't ask to be here. You're making a decision to bring them into this. And a lot of us make a decision to bring a child into the world, you know, with the red paint all over the walls that this is probably not going to be my partner 25 years from now.
Exactly.
But thinking, like you said, let's have this baby, put a band-aid, he'll stay. No, he won't. He'll eventually go because it's not right. It doesn't fit like a glove. You're forcing it to fit like a glove. And we're not thinking about the damage it's going to do to the children on the back end. And as a mother of a 24-year-old and a 14-year-old, you sometimes can damage your kids with your choices.
It's true. I look at that as a doula, how many births I've been part of, like through the community. I work with a nonprofit.
Yeah. Wow. And you got to talk about that.
That is heavy where you have to be like, you know, I need a pause. Mm-hmm. I never really get sick, knock on wood, but December I was because I was a part of four different families where there was no fathers.
Wow.
And the mothers had mental issues and they didn't have and mental health is tough because you have this issue that may cause you not to be so nice. And eventually people go, I'm done with this. She's always being crazy. I don't want to deal with this anymore. And now you don't have anybody, but yeah, and you are having a baby.
What do you do when you have these clients with Sita and you are pouring into them in this way? What do you do for your peace? What do you do to center yourself? What do you do to cleanse yourself? What do you do to rejuvenate from pouring into all these women?
I am now getting certified as a sound bath healer because I use sound bath every morning when I meditate.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned to be a lot more, I don't want to say isolated, but kind of pick the conversations you choose to participate in.
Ooh.
You know, because if you have clients telling you all their information, right, you're overwhelmed. You may have a friend that you know she's going to have something sad to tell you or more of her drama to tell you. And it's not that you don't love her.
Yeah.
But right now, I'm over here giving out so much that I really can't show up for you in the way you would need me to. Because literally I had a fever and I thought, where's this fever coming from? One of my clients ended up in the ICU. She had mental issues, I believe, like mental issues. And then also just not everything connecting well for her.
Right.
She also had a 1.5-year-old baby. And she said to me, can you babysit? And I said, babysit? That's out of my scope of practice.
Right.
And she said to me, I can't even pick up my toddler because I don't feel well.
Oh my God.
And so the next day I was talking to my friend. I'm like, oh my God, what do I do? Because I also have friends that are social workers that tell you the system is very racist. So if they see a Black mother, the first thing they'll do is take your baby.
Take your baby.
Take your baby. So I'm like, well, if she's calling me for help, she obviously is not a mother who does not care.
That's right.
Whether she has everything, no.
Right.
So that night we were talking at like 3 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning. I said, I'll call her around 9. She called me. She said, can you come help me? I said, sure. I didn't know what she was going to request.
Right.
And I got there and she said, can you give my baby a bath?
Wow.
And can you feed her? And I had never, a 1.5-year-old, I'm like, it's going to go wild. She's probably going to be like, who are you?
Right.
But babies are so smart.
Yes.
That she was like, hey, girl, like her arms went up. She was like, please do change me. Even in the bath, she's like, this is great. Feeding her was a breeze.
Wow.
You know, so I was just like, wow, babies just know.
They adapt. That, like,
they adapt. Yeah.
No clean energy.
Yes.
Babies know. Just like animals know. You ever see animals, they go to some people, they bark at some people. They feel the energy. That baby knew you was coming there to love on her and to take care of her. And that's all she needed. And the fact that the mom reached out to you, Wasita, says a lot about your practice, a lot about the comfort that your clients have with you as an individual. And you not even questioning and saying, you know what? I really don't think I should be doing this. You went with your instinct as a woman. You knew she needed you.
Yes, yes, indeed.
So what happened after that?
We did the bath with her baby, went home. She still didn't feel well. And next thing I know, I got a call. I'm in intensive care.
Mm-hmm.
The nurses are not often nice to doulas.
Mm.
You know, so they kind of have it. Some doulas, I guess, are a little bit more protective or going against the doctors or nurses. I don't, right? Okay. I'm with my client. I'm supporting my client. This is not my birth.
Right.
But the energy was there. So I was very much treading lightly, but I wanted her to know you have someone here.
Right.
Some kind of way, later that night, she wound up needing emergency C-section, being in ICU.
Oh my God.
Thank God her friend had the baby. And it was just ICU. I worked in hospitals when I was a kid, like, you know, 20 years old, as like a little manager.
Mm-hmm.
But ICU is so scary. Hospitals are scary in general for me, but in particularly ICU is like, are you coming home?
Right.
I don't know. Right. You know, and so trying to get a conversation, the nurses are like, we can't tell you anything because you're just her doula.
Right.
The client's a little bit out of it.
Yes.
So you're like, I'm here, but she doesn't know I'm here.
Right.
And I can't do anything. So luckily,
mm-hmm.
at those moments when you're like, I might as well go. I feel helpless.
Mm.
Someone walks in, a social worker, and explains what has happened.
Okay.
and the client wakes up as well. She's so much of a woman. Can you do me a favor and like shave my chin? Because I find this hair there. I'm like, oh, okay, that's so important. Sure, girl, like, let's
okay,
make sure
you're back.
We'll be back now, you know. But she went home in a few days. Baby was in NICU.
Oh, no.
Christmas Day, baby's able to come home.
Mm-hmm.
And again, she has issues. So she's like, hey, can you bring, I want to bring him home on the train. This is the part of being a doula that is so priceless.
Mm.
It's Christmas Day and you're like, oh no, that doesn't make sense. On a train or a bus? Mm. No.
Right.
So we go, I meet her there at the hospital. She has to take classes. Apparently you take a baby home, you need an hour class on how to put them in a seat, this and that.
Right.
I'm with the toddler again, who's like, hey, it's me and you again here. Right. We hang out, put her in an Uber, she's home with her baby. I'm really excited about being a mother. But again, many times you'll see women have babies and they'll say to me, I want to be loved. So I'm having this baby.
Yeah.
Have you talked to the dad? I haven't talked to the dad or the family. I'm just going to have this baby. I'm going to feel loved.
But you know what? You end up having that baby. And sometimes that baby can't love you in the way that you, that expectation that you set for an unborn, for a now a born child, but doesn't have the capabilities. You know, a baby wants to be fed, changed, hugged. So you have to pour into this baby that's in somewhere in your head, you think the baby's going to pour into you. And it's just a complete opposite.
It's very true.
It's a complete opposite. And I wish, you know, the way you and I are having this authentic conversation, I wish people were honest.
That's right. I get upset. There's a, I won't even say his name, but he was saying, you know, if you have children, mm-hmm. that you're not valuable of a high quality man, right?
Oh, no.
Oh yeah. He was like, you know, if you're overweight, and women were listening and taking it in. But what I was hearing is this, a bunch of men were clapping, right? Who are baby fathers.
Okay.
So again, it's up to us women to say, these are my standards.
And this is where you have to meet me.
Exactly. The second time I think I was part of a birth,
mm-hmm.
you know, sometimes you're beside the mom. I hadn't went between a mother's legs yet. And I did.
Right.
And I thought, that was some real shit. Like, I was like, oh my God.
Yes.
You know, the idea of what your body has to do.
To birth.
Yes, to birth. Yes. Yes. My mother would say, you could die having a baby. I thought, you just want me to have sex, girl, whatever. But now as a doula, I'm like, yes.
Yes, you can. You can have a heart attack. Yes. You can have an aneurysm. So many things can go wrong. And so the idea of how women, I feel, are treated, Black women are treated in the hospitals, mm-hmm. as if, you know, we're the Hulk. Like, girl, you'll be all right. It's nothing. I'm like, where's the compassion? It's almost like it's the slave mentality in all these people, because they're used to us birthing our babies, birthing your babies, breastfeeding our babies, breastfeeding your babies, and taking care of your man. Okay. Exactly. And still got to take care of my husband. This is what we have, our ancestors have gone through, and they have the same mentality that this is how it should be. We're human beings, just like the next person.
Exactly.
Our bodies is made just like the next person. And I hate to see it in a hospital, and I do see it. I do see it. That's why it's so important. The work that you are doing, the work that the doulas are doing, is mandatory, because who else is going to fight for us?
And then also educate, you know, that's the thing, educating the mother on her choices.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you don't know,
right.
You know, I've seen doctors basically force epidurals. You say you don't want it. No, thank you. But here they come again.
Yeah.
You sure you don't want it? And sometimes they'll send a mail.
Yes.
And you know what it'll
make you.
Exactly. Is that, and now you're like, well, maybe I do. Right. Yeah. And that's when a doula's really needed, where she can remind you of your power that yeah. you have a choice,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether or not they have a C-section or not. But I've seen them treat women different when they're Black, when they're younger, when there's no partner.
Yes. Or there's no family, there's no friends. They're just there to, you know, have this baby alone. And it's so sad, because I gave birth, I have two children, but between my two children, I had twins, but I lost them.
Oh,
and I got to tell you, depending even what hospital you're at matters.
Mm-hmm.
It matters. I was in this hospital, LaGuardia, when I lost my twins. And I was crying. My daughter was with me. The reason why she was with me, because we went to an appointment to hear the baby's heartbeats.
Oh.
And the doctor was like, Andrea, I don't want to scare you, but I would rather just send you to the hospital because I'm just not getting the baby heartbeats. And that happens sometimes, just sometimes they're in an angle. But I can tell in her face that she was concerned. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I have my daughter. I mean, she's only six. And they was like, it's okay. Just bring her over. We'll put her in another room. And when the doctors came into the ultrasound and everything, said the babies are dead. And I was bawling.
God.
And you know, a doctor looked at me and said, you're young. You could just have another baby. And I was mortified. And they said, listen, what do you want to do? I said, I will not let you touch me at all.
Yes.
I went back home. I set up the appointment at New York Presbyterian to take the babies out. And I said to myself, they didn't even see the pain that I was in emotionally, mm-hmm. physically. They didn't see anything. All they saw was the color of my skin.
Exactly.
And that I had a daughter. They didn't know I was married. They didn't know any of this. But the color of my skin made it so easy for them to have no compassion for me.
It's true. It's true. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have friends that are doctors and nurses, and they will tell me to my face, Wasita, doctors are nerds who like money.
Mm.
We don't care about the people majority of the time. We want the money. What you do as a doula, a midwife, they're not making the same money.
Right.
That's totally different.
Right.
You know, right. And I'm like, wow. So they don't really care. They're thinking about a paycheck.
The check. How many times you walk in a doctor's office, they're ready to write you a prescription. For every prescription they write, they get a kickback. So it's a sad system, but work that you're doing, work that the other doulas are doing, it's necessary. It's mandatory. And I know majority of what you women are doing is because you're compassionate and empathetic to the situation. It's not the dollar sign.
No, I didn't grow up seeing enough Black women being celebrated. So I really focus a lot on postpartum mm-hmm. and fertility, holding mm-hmm. that space, because I didn't realize fertility-wise, my emotions and my eating mm-hmm. needed to be attacked, planned out for the goal.
Yes.
Eating right for the baby, not to eat right so I can look good for the beach, right. is different than the baby. Mm-hmm. Dealing with my relationship drama and trauma and dealing with my childhood trauma as well mm-hmm. was going to affect my ability to conceive, right? I got certified as a Moroccan postpartum doula. I saw a beautiful video. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, they were like celebrating them. Mm-hmm. People come in and take care of you. You get a bath every day. I'm like, well, somebody's going to bathe you? Oh my God. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that would make such a difference in seeing the mothers that I see daily that go, hurry up, come on. Those women have not healed emotionally and physically through the postpartum period, because they have had to jump right back to cooking, back to work, and now we want them to look good as well. Mm-hmm. So of course, and again, not everyone chooses to be a mother and not everyone makes it through birth.
Okay.
So when you, it should be celebrated.
It should be celebrated, and it's just not. It's a thing like, it's an expectation. This is what women are supposed to do. And I think it needs to change into it being an expectation of us to do, and a celebration. Not of really so much the baby, a celebration that you brought life into the world and you made it.
And you're going to sacrifice your entire life.
Your entire life.
I always say you will never sleep again after a baby.
No. And even as I don't have any babies at home, as you know, anymore, but my daughter's 24. I still worry.
Yes.
I still worry. My mom is 75 years old. Okay. And she has children that's almost 60. And you know what my mom says? I will always worry about my children to the day I die.
Sure.
Don't stop being a mom. Yeah. And although, you know, I was a daddy's girl, I was very close to my dad. There's nothing like a mother.
It's very true. It's true. Like I said, my mother was one of the ones who said, I'm having my daughter because I want to be loved.
Mm.
So from the beginning, I've never had a childhood.
So that pressure that you've carried.
Yes. I've always spent time nurturing her, you know, and so she can't sometimes see it because I worry about her so much.
Yes.
We talk like 5 times a day about nothing. What happened at your job? Did you walk the dogs? Right. But it's this relationship that has started when she was carrying me.
Wow.
You know, and so it's like now she worries. I moved to the Bronx, started crying. Adam's like, oh, why are you crying? Mm-hmm. She went into tears. Wow. When I was like, I'm leaving my job, I'm becoming a doula. They fired me today. I don't care because I was at a birth. I'm working out. Tears.
Wow.
Because in her mind, it's always, and I think that's what hurt her with the divorce, who will take care of you? Because in her mind, it's the man who has to take care of you.
No, you know, we have these ideologies. We all have them because of how we were raised, mm-hmm. right? I look at a lot of things that I have gone through in my life, and that's what I was taught. My mom's a Jehovah's Witness, right? She comes with this religion and all these different things. You know, my daughter is a queer woman, and I grew up in a household where I was taught that was wrong, you know? Mm-hmm. And here I am. I have this idea of, you know, my daughter's, you know, I can't wait. You know, she graduates high school. We have these big parties. She graduates college. We have these parties. I can't wait to plan her wedding. And it's like, well, I like men and women. I was like, what do you mean? I'm confused. But I'm confused because how I was raised.
Of course. Yes. Yeah.
What was instilled in me. And mm-hmm. so here we are. We have these things that we're taught, and we pass on our learned trauma on to our children sometimes. And I think even growing up, I say to myself, it's okay to change. It's okay to be open to change. It's okay to say that I got to unlearn some bad shit that I was taught because it's not real. And I want to ask you, how do you set boundaries? How do you deal with past trauma and letting it go and fixing it so that you can say, listen, this is just all not right and not true. And I got to try my best to cleanse myself of what I was taught, because here it's going to affect me in my relationships with my daughter. It may affect me in my relationship with certain friends. What advice could you give to moms out there that may be struggling with past trauma? And now here they are, they're having children, they're about to give birth. How do you speak to that?
You know, I did therapy, mm-hmm. of course, around being molested as a child.
I can speak to that.
Mm-hmm. It was, I brought it up when I was like much older, 28. My mom kind of brushed it.
Mm-hmm. Same here.
I was like, I was upset, but I wasn't willing to let our relationship go. And then I hit, like, once I had that abortion and divorce, I was strong in who I am as a woman.
Right. Because,
you know what, I have had to have a whole abortion by myself, be yeah. homeless, yeah. anything I can do. It's just me and God out here, meaning the God who lives inside of me, right?
Right.
And so going through that and talking about it, and also really looking to see my behaviors. There's certain things I do mm-hmm. that are directly connected to the trauma. Mm. Wanting to get married, being upset that he couldn't protect me the way I wanted and that he let me down was because I didn't have a dad. And I was like, wow, I wanted him to be everything I didn't have. And because he looked that way and then he was not, I was like blown away. Like, oh my God, I put him up on a pedestal with God. You know, so I definitely believe.
We all do that.
Isn't it like, I was like, what happened? I think after realizing I wasn't living my life, I was living the life of what those around me had said. You know, get married, have the children, marry the guy with money, you'll be okay. I did all of that to realize this isn't even how I don't even like this. If you ever see pictures of me when I was married,
wow,
I looked sad.
You look sad.
I looked sad. My dress code was different. It was so bad that afterwards, when I got divorced, I have two clients that are therapists. Mm-hmm. I see them an hour a week. They walked up to me and said, you look back. You look like your normal self. Like, I was wearing a mask, but obviously it wasn't that tight.
Chow. Now, let me tell you about the mask, because I'm now wearing a mask for, I would say, my teens and 20s. And something happened where I couldn't pretend anymore. Mm-hmm. It wasn't worth it to pretend, because I would go in the mirror in the bathroom and lock the door, and I would just bawl. Mm-hmm. Because here I am faking it, and I ain't making it. You know what I mean? But for who, and at what cost am I doing this? And why am I doing this? Why don't I just say who I am and what happened to me and just be me? Once I did that, Wasita, my entire life changed.
That's so beautiful. It like birthed, it freed you up.
I felt free. I felt stifled, like someone was taking a pillow and sitting on it and stifling me. And finally I pushed them off and I realized it doesn't matter what you think about me, because I go in that fucking mirror every day and I cry.
Exactly.
So what's the point of living the lie if I can't look at myself in the mirror?
Exactly. I have a lot of friends though that are seniors. I think that's also strengthened me. Like, I'm probably, it's so weird. I have an 81-year-old friend. We talk like every day for hours. I think they help me heal, because sometimes being in therapy can feel a little bit cold, right? Like,
yes.
You see the therapist.
Injectable.
Yes. Whereas though, if a senior of your community has such powerful intuition and medicine on their heart.
Yes.
But you don't even, you're like, oh, wow. One of my 81-year-old friends, her mother was raped by the father. I'm so crazy. I'm like, well, weren't the cops called? And she was like, Wasita, we lived in the backwoods of Virginia. She was a Black woman. Wow. No one cared. They got married.
Wow.
Like, I'm like, that is so insane. So I think seniors have such a strong power and it can help us heal. Because they've been places that we haven't. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes we're like, oh, you know, when she's older. I tell you, my mother's 59, my 81-year-old friend and my 75-year-old friend are much more progressive.
Wow.
And understanding of the markings of what slavery did and what we need to do to undo it.
To undo it.
To
Let's speak to that. What would you say to our listeners too? Because I have a lot of young listeners too. I have 30% of my listeners, it fluctuates a lot, are between the ages of 18 and 25. What do you say? We know what our history is. We know what we want our legacy to be. But what do you say? You know, it's very easy to say, well, you know, this is what we've seen. This is what we've gone through. But how do we rise above that? What do you say to those listeners?
You know, for me, I'm a big why. I had to question why I'm thinking something. Why do I crave that, right? Like when you're hungry and you want like a cupcake and you realize you're really hungry. Mm-hmm. It's the same with how we see one another. Mm-hmm. There's a big gap between Afro-Americans and Caribbean Americans. And why is that there, right? Mm-hmm. And like our parents have said things and they did. My friend explained to me, because I was married to a Caribbean guy. He said, well, we moved to America for money. So we kind of see Americans as wanting money. So it's understanding that and where it came from, then you can kind of go back and undo. Yes. But it takes that curiosity of, why do I think that way? You know, we were talking about today, 5 o'clock in the morning, I was on the phone and we were saying about Black men wanting lighter women with straight hair, right? Like, is that how your mom looks?
Look mix.
It who looks exactly. What it has to do with is that you as a slave or your ancestors, you want power like the slave master has. So you see his white wife as power. And a sign of you made it in life. So when we see those things, we can undo them, but we have to accept what has happened, the effects of it, and move forward. You know, it's so much though. I always question people in my family community. Why don't you like this kind of people again? You know that about that? So all of them are like that. The whole bunch is like that. I'm curious about this. Please break it down. Give me some examples of this. They never have them.
It's because it's learned behavior. And some of us are too lazy to go and read and do the research and fact check and really learn the history and where they come from. It's really how bad do you want to change your thought process?
I will say the younger generation, they are so solid in this, though. They do so much research.
They're woke, honey.
They are woke. I'm like, wow. They do the research. They call the facts. They call people out.
Yes.
Whether it's one another or other races when need be. This is totally different where I think in the past, people just wanted to get along.
Yes. So we were silent.
Yes, we were silent. Yes.
We silenced our truth. We silenced our voice. And we just said, you know what? We'll just be here.
Yes. Right?
But Brianna's generation, they're not having it.
Yeah. Not I'm having so it. Proud of your daughter. And so your relationship for you being so accepting and her being so open.
You know what? We pretty much grew up together. We grew up together. We're only 20 years apart, not even 20 years apart. But we grew up together. And I got to tell you, my daughter would ask me, Wasita, some questions, child, that I would say, I could lie about it, you know, or I could tell her the truth. And I'd explain to her. I said, yeah, Brian, I've been through that. I did that. And she was like, you did? And what did you do? And I would tell her. And I, you know, my husband would always, and this was a big part that I say, because as you know, I was divorced for 5 years. And then Barry and I got back together 5 years later. So
wow,
go figure. No one really knows the story. I've been very private about it. Not that I'm hiding anything. It's just that it's no one's business, really.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I got to tell you one thing. Our breakup 5 years ago was a lack of communication. A breakdown of communication, a breakdown of he saw me as a 17-year-old and I'm not 17 no more. So I have changed, right? And so it was that battle of power. And I think in relationships, the power has to go back and forth, but with love, not with anger and animosity. And so it was just the relationship broke down. One thing we've always agreed on was how we was going to raise our kids. Right. And so that's why it worked in that way, because we always knew what we wanted these kids to have: education, be world travelers, blah, 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 blah. Responsible, have good credit, save your money, don't live beyond your damn means. Right. And so we're happy on how we are. Jackson's 14, still young. You never know which way he's going to go, but you always pray that he won't fall too far from the tree. Brianna, I'm proud of that girl. I really am. But what I'm most proud of is the relationship we've built, and we built it on honesty. And like I said, you know, telling your daughter that, you know what, do you remember when you had to come to jail and get mommy out with daddy, like prison, like with the doors, you know, this whole orange, new black, I was in an orange jumpsuit. I know what it's like. Do you know what it is to explain that to your child? Cause she was 1 year old when it happened. It's not easy.
No. Yeah.
Not embarrassed. It just was not easy to have those conversations. But the woman she is today is because I was an open book to her. I have never painted this perfect life for her, ever. So I will say to these mothers out there, you will have indiscretions. There's things that you've gone through in your marriage, things you did as a kid that you're not proud, whatever it was. When your children ask you, it's because they want to know if maybe they're facing it. Maybe a friend is facing, they're asking you for a reason. That is your opportunity to give them a learning experience, even if it makes you look bad. You have to be honest. You have to be honest. And so we have these honest conversations. I'm so glad I have a daughter that I couldn't come to my mother with these things. I can talk to my mother about these things because she was so judgmental, and she can't help it because that's how she was raised by her mother.
Of course. Yeah. It's just, yeah.
Right. It's a cycle. I wanted to break that cycle. And could I tell you that I aced it? Hell no. And any mother out there telling you that I've aced being a mom, I'm a great mom. Cause sweetheart, it's not for you to say if you was a great mom. It's for your kids to say if you was a great mom. It's like you're saying, well, I'm a great wife. You think you're a great wife. I thought I was a great wife. Nah, bitch, I had some shit that I needed to work on.
Exactly. Okay?
Yeah. I had some stuff I needed to work on. I had some damn luggage that was packed in that freaking laundry that needed to be unpacked and washed and put the fuck away, that exactly. I was putting on him that he had nothing to do with.
Yes. Yes.
You know, sometimes when you're raped as a young person, you take these things, these anger issues you have from that person that violated you, sometimes you bring it to the people that really did not do that to you. Right. So you have to go through therapy. You have to, and it's constant work to say that, okay, I've been in therapy literally 19 years. I'm healed 100%? False. No, I learned to cope because there's certain triggers that happens to me that could set me off like this.
Yeah, in therapy, I always came out crying.
Me too.
I always came out crying. And it was like, I mean, she was giving me that mirror. And that's what I think good therapists do. Like, how do you feel about it? How do you feel about what just happened to you? You feel good about this?
Right.
About this person you're into entertaining? And it was really that work, you know, and even people that we think love us can also be hurting us.
That's what I've learned.
And it can be up close on you. And you're thinking, well, we talk all the time. We're so close, you know, but especially I say for you being so free and letting your daughter have her own life. I, and full disclosure, had a girlfriend at one time. My mother's best friends were gay. So I didn't think she would have an issue. Right. She was upset. She took it as, I hate men. I'm like, I don't hate men. I'm just curious.
Right.
You know, I want to know if it's a better world over there than what's over here. Right. But she was so busy wanting her world to look a particular way that she was like, no, no, no. And it was like a pausing for us. And even now, I said to her, listen, we've got to accept that we're different women.
Yes.
If we can't accept that, then we're not going to be able to have a relationship.
Right.
And that's how that sits. Wow. Because sometimes when parents get older,
yes,
and they kind of forget about everything they did, even though you were there, yes, watching, right?
Yes. Yeah. But
now they're like, I'm in church and I'm married. And you're like, no, no. Yeah. I was here for the other ride, though.
Exactly.
And that was not all churched out, you know. So please don't, because they'll judge. And then also, too, just thinking that you have to want a marriage and want a baby. I want to do the work that helps my people heal. I'm becoming a sound bath therapist because I want, men kept coming to me saying, what are you doing for men? You said, well, you have your own people. Go to other men. What are you doing bothering me?
Right.
But when I became certified as a sound bath therapist, I can help men. I can help more women.
Yes.
And oftentimes we want to see other brown people. I wasn't trusting the vaccine until I heard it from a brown woman. Like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Right.
So it's all about that. That's most important. Can you do something that helps others?
Yes.
And financial abundance isn't so I can have designer clothes. It's back to, again, helping others. So they can, we often never have the opportunity. I was in a room full of Black angel investors.
Yes.
And that's what they spoke about, was that oftentimes other cultures have the opportunity to fall up and down, start a business and it didn't work out.
Wow.
We never have that.
We never
have. I had that when I had my body products. I was like, oh, I learned so much.
Right.
There was no penalty to pay. But imagine never being able to chase your dream.
Oh, because of money and not having that financial support. It's tough.
My mother told me I should work for the post office.
Okay. I mean, listen, you know, I grew up in a generation where that, my mom was a cleaning lady in the Trump Towers for 20 something years. And then went back to college in her 40s to become a nurse. And so that's what she retired as, a nurse. And I will tell you this, every generation is supposed to get better. But we grew up at a time where working in the post office, you know, having a city job mattered because you had benefits, you paid into your social security. It's all about that mindset, and it's nothing wrong with those jobs. Okay. I was an assistant on Wall Street for 20 years. I was a waitress for 4 years, right? Now I'm doing this position in chief of staff for a family. And I will tell you this, it is not what you do. Okay, that does not define who you are as an individual. There's a lot of CEOs out there, Wasita, that are really not nice people. They're disgusting people, and they'll do anything to be on top. And I have realized to stop looking at what people do for a living and letting that be the cosign of who you are, because it's not. I've let a lot of women into my life that are no longer in my life, because their spirit is awful. Their energy is harmful. They talk about Black Lives Matter, let's support Black women, and then in here taking a knife and in your back, right? So we have to be accountable who we allow to come into our space. And when somebody show you who they are, could you freaking just believe them? Like, how many times you gotta be slapped upside your head? Believe the first time.
It's so hard sometimes. You know, as women, we're like, maybe I can turn it around a little bit.
I say that.
A little bit, and it's like, if this does not feel right, I had a whole meditation I heard last Sunday on this.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not a hell yes, it's a hell no.
Mm.
And particularly in the beginning, a lot of times people will tell you how they treated others, and your turn will come.
Yes.
And so when you hear that, leave the table with love.
Yes.
Because eventually
your turn is coming. Wasita, I received that. You have so much knowledge. You have so much wisdom. Yeah. And I really appreciate you sharing this with me and with the listeners today, because it's so important that we, if we have these platforms, that we put the best of the best on the platform. You know, we really need more women like you that's living in their truth, authentically, what they're teaching, they believe it themselves. They're incorporating into their everyday life. It's who they are. It's a part of who they are. And I feel so honored to have sat here today with you to speak about all these I mean, we covered a lot of topics today, but I think the listeners are listening and saying, oh my God, I'm not alone. You know, this woman, Wasita, is out here putting it all out there, and I'm not alone, and it's okay. And look where she is today. She rose beyond the occasion, living in her truth. Another thing that I got to commend you on is standing up for what you believe in your relationship with your mom.
Thank you.
I get emotional because it's not easy to do.
No, it's not.
It's not easy to tell the woman who birthed you, Mom, it's not right what you're thinking, and I have my own life to live. That touched me so much that I'm saying that takes a lot of love of your reflection in the mirror. You really love yourself, right?
That's why I say for you to accept your daughter and be like, because I know when you had her, day one, you were like, the wedding, college, this is what happened. Yes. And then she was like, no, I have something else planned.
Yes.
And to let go of that, because mothers have told me, since the moment I've been pregnant, I've thought about the whole life of this child.
Yes. Yes.
And now it's different. And then you also have to think, is it a reflection of me? Which is not. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes society will say, well, you know what happened. You know how they were.
Yeah.
I watched my mother. This is one of the reasons why I probably didn't choose motherhood. Mm-hmm. My brother got into serious trouble. Mm-hmm. And when your kids do good, everyone claps lightly.
Yes.
But when your kids do bad, everyone drags you, points you.
Yes.
There's all the negative things to say, how it was your fault. You knew you could have did better. You went out too much. This is what happened. And you still have to stand by that child when they do good and bad.
And bad, yes.
And what you do also affects them. So when you have a moment, it affects the child. And that's the thing about being a mother that is so sacred is that even when people stay together and they're married, you know, when you're not married, you feel like, I would leave. I wouldn't stay for the kids, until you're married and you see that these children, I birthed them. They didn't choose to come here. We love each other. We're not the best anymore, but I want this for my children. You understand it now in such a way.
Right.
You know, I'm so happy that your daughter has someone loving, and thank you for creating a space where women can come and share. Thank you for having me. I was so excited because for some reason I bought extra singing bowls and it's made me more vocal.
Yeah.
That's what I think happened, was that my mother and I had this huge conversation. I didn't know where it came from, but my chakras must have been blocked. So I thought, I always tell everything. I'm an outspoken person. I have high energy. That doesn't mean that I can tell someone I love what I don't like and how I felt like they did something that was hurtful to me. It's not to say I thought it was the same. Like, oh, of course, I'm never shy. But after using these bowls, things from like 10, 12 years came out.
Wow.
And we were both on the phone like, is it a full moon today? Or it was just after that, it's been like tiptoeing around one another, but I had to stand firm. And even when you're a child, your feelings are to be validated. You are to be heard. Oftentimes as Black children, we're told whatever your mother does is fine. She's your mom. You're lucky that she had you. And now it's, no, you know what? I love you. I do love you. And I honor you for doing the very best that you could have. But here, you could have showed up much better.
Yes.
And that's a thing.
And you know what? How could you not receive that? Because it's coming from a place of love, right? The way you're talking to me, the way I'm listening to how you delivered it, it's not of malice. It's a place of love. It's a place of, I want to get this right, but here, I got to tell the truth to not only free myself, but hopefully to free you as well.
Indeed.
Oh, Wasita, I got to tell you, we want the listeners to know, where could they find you? Where they can find your services? Are you taking on new clients? please give us on where we can get you, please.
So everything's under Wasida. It's wasida.com. Same with Instagram. So it's WASIDAH. I'm not taking new births right now because I'm much more focused on fertility. I make fertility boxes now, especially with COVID going on. And then also postpartum. So right now I'm much more in that world. Especially with COVID right now, you have to do a test. Can you be at the birth? Can you not be at the birth? Right. So right now I'm focused on helping women who really want to be in the best shape of their life from a reproductive area, eating better, whether they're thinking about having a child or maybe having a child later, healing through the postpartum period.
Are you doing, for the fertility, are you doing clients through Zoom? Are you open to seeing clients face to face?
I am. You know, what happened was, so I had this whole layout of how it was going to look. I'm going to go to clients and I'll have meet them one-on-one. Yeah. But what happened was clients would say, can you send me a box of supplements?
Right.
So we would wind up having a conversation through Zoom or the phone to learn more about what was going on. Do you have thyroids? You know, is it your age you're worried about? And from there, I could just send them a box and that's worked out well.
Okay.
Yeah, so it kind of was like throughout the pivoting came a whole nother way of working with clients. And I think it makes them feel safe. I don't have to come in your home.
Right. Right.
You know, but you can kind of do this on your own. Because with fertility, it's not like I can't tell you on the phone or through Zoom.
Right. Right. What's next? What's next for you? What's in a year from now? I know what you're working on right at this moment, but a year from now, where do you want to be?
Right now, I'm getting certified as a women minority business, and I'm doing, which is like a little stressful, but I'm hoping to do more wellness workshops. I always wanted to do them in our community. I feel as though we never have that, right? We're like, meditation is a white thing. I don't want to do that. And you've been to, I'm sure, Lathan's boutique, and when she holds space for people, you start crying. You're like, I don't even know what happened. I just feel like crying. But to be able to go in corporations and do that for jobs, people are coming back to work after losing family members and friends to COVID, experiencing COVID, but then also being able to hold those spaces like in a center in the Bronx for free. And just say, hey, I'm going to show up. I'm going to get some sponsors. We're going to have lunch and let it be 90 minutes where they can actually feel nurtured. I love my yoga classes so much because I always felt like somebody was hugging me and saying, hey, are you okay? As an adult, no one swaddles you anymore. Like, that's it. So, so much of what I do through the sound part and through the Moroccan part allows me to really swaddle adults.
I love that because we as adults definitely need to be swaddled. It's something we were taught that we could just do it to a baby. But we need that, especially in this time right now where we are. Your work is so necessary. Wasida, what you are doing, I can't continue to tell you how important and necessary you are to allow people to pour into you because you're giving so much of yourself. So when you get it, allow us to love on you and receive it and don't question it. I know sometimes when we are taking care of people and giving in so much, we ourselves don't want to accept the love, the support, but we have to in order for us to keep on the journey that we're going. So I want to thank you so much for joining our Mirrors Reflections. Thank you for blessing us with all
your
knowledge. I'm so, so excited for everyone to hear this because it's needed. And I want you to promise me, when you do your sound, what is it called? Your
sound bath.
Your sound bath. I want you to see if you can get some of my listeners on board. To doing a live because I've been to one and I got to tell you, I was like knocked out, not sleeping, but my mind and my body just stopped. Like I was able to receive it. And then I never went to one after that. But I would love to, you know, be a part.
I'm looking to donate because a part of finishing my certification is to host sound bath. So I'm looking to do that, and particularly in March and April.
All right. So then we just have to think about even if we maybe host one at my house and do it, you know, kind of, you know, just have a few people and we record it.
Yes, yes, I would love that.
I have a backyard, or we could even do it, and we just have to think about the space. But I would love to host one for you.
Thank you so much. That would be beautiful.
Yeah, if you need the space, absolutely. I would. I just really think. I just remember the feeling that I had of stillness and of letting go, because I can be a control freak and wanting to control everything and make everything perfect when I know in my mind nothing is ever going to be perfect. So it's something about that, of just hearing the ding.
I walked in, I saw the therapist and I thought, I'm going to be so bored. I just know I'm going to be bored. I mean, I'm just going to want to run out of here. Mm-hmm. I woke up, I was like, what happened? I feel amazing. This is over? No. Like, she cheated us, girl. Look at your clock. It's not 90 minutes, right? We were at Lathan's and she had a friend who did a whole workshop there. And it was 90 minutes. And in the middle of me, I didn't have my full apartment yet, going through all of that. And then having that moment to step away from it and then come back, I felt lighter.
You felt lighter. Well, there you have it. You have a space.
Thank you.
And once again, it's been an honor. It's been a blessing. And thank you for making me feel so comfortable that I could be open and vulnerable with you. So even though it's our merged reflections, my guest has some superpowers where they're able to still make me reflect. So thank you.
Thank you so, so much for holding space today. I know we're going to have a beautiful week after this. We had that full moon yesterday.
Yes. And I receive it. And I'm sending it to you as well. Let's just keep that halo going and let's continue to bless the people that we work with and the people that surround us.
Oh, God bless and have a beautiful day.
Thank you so much, Wasita.
Welcome.
Thank you for joining our Mirrors Reflections with Andrea Jackson. I am excited to announce that we're starting a new segment called Ask APJ, which you can then send me a direct message to my Instagram with any dilemmas that you're facing, any questions that you may have, and we will discuss it on my next podcast live.